back with the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are pleased to be with Bernard Cornwell. I often think of the discipline that is required in television and filmmaking, that in order to get all of these things together that are required to make a movie or a TV series or a nightly news, there's great discipline in it. And I'm wondering if that's some of what you brought to this opportunity that you gave yourself in acting recklessly, dangerously, that one can't just wanna be, that there are skills you have to have, including discipline.
I never feel it's particularly disciplined. And we all volunteered. I mean, you give people a choice. They'd love to work in films or television, and lots and lots and lots would love to be a writer. And one of the things that really bores me witless, is when I hear other writers telling me how difficult it is. Because I think, well, who came along and put a gun to your head and said, I'm sorry, you're going to stop being a teacher, you're going to stop being a television producer, and you're going to be a writer? Oh, no, please, anything but that, no. You know, they volunteer. Everybody wants, they wanted it. They really wanted it badly. And then they bitch about it. It just doesn't make sense to me. Because I don't... It is incredibly enjoyable. I've been enormously fortunate that I've always worked in something I enjoyed, whether it was working in television production or now for a much longer period as a writer. But I enjoy it. And if I didn't enjoy it, what am I doing? Yeah. You know, I mean, why don't I go and find another job that I might enjoy? And I think the joy of reading a good book, and okay, this is... If it's a story, which I write stories, is to find out what happens. And the joy of writing it is exactly the same, because I don't know what's going to happen until I write it. You know, I sit down in the morning, I don't know what's going to happen to that character that day. And
yet you have a framework around which that has to happen.
Yes, you have a framework. But characters have sort of, I mean, they do things, as you know they do, as you write, that they take on lives of their own and they do things you don't expect. I mean, you introduce a character to fulfill a purpose in a book, which is, you know, it's a very instrumental purpose. That the character is there simply to say to the hero or heroine, do this. And it's the excuse to motivate them to do it. But instead of just being an instrumental person, that character takes the book over. And you have no idea why it happens or how it happens, but you just have to run with it. Because it's so much fun, because as you're writing, that this... Okay, you see, I know that psychiatrists would say it all comes from inside your head. But I have no idea how it works. What I know is that I enjoy it, so I never think of it as needing discipline. I just think of it as something I really enjoy doing, and I can't imagine not doing it.
Well, the whimsy of which you speak, that the delight of, I don't know what's going to happen today as I sit down, I don't think most people really think about that. I mean, when one reads a book, it's already in print, and there are a million copies, and it's translated in 26 languages. Part of the excitement, I think, of reading a really terrific historical novel is that you keep that sense of excitement as you go forward with it as the reader.
Yes, and that, of course, I guess comes from the writer. And when people talk to me about writing, I mean, the one thing I cannot answer is I don't know where that skill comes from, the skill of pacing and of, you know, holding things back and to keep people moving. I mean, the greatest compliment I ever get is when people say to me, I couldn't put the book down, I wanted to go to sleep, but I had to start the next chapter and I finished it. And I think that's great, because it means it worked, that you actually have drawn them on through the book. Well, what's drawing them is a story. And there is obviously an art to storytelling, but I have no idea what it is.
Well, that's why it's an art.
Yes, I guess, yes.
Bill being one of those who stayed up entirely too late last night finishing the book.
Your publicity suggests that the world would have ended badly had Alfred not succeeded, that it was very important that the English were able to keep the Danes from overrunning England or taking over. But at the same time, in the book itself, you're very clear that that these people had displaced the Britons, who had displaced somebody else probably.
Poor old Picts.
And certainly culturally, if not, racially is not the right word, but
ethnically
sort of. Do you have that sort of cataclysmic sense that had Alfred not been great, that it would have been catastrophic?
I wanted the Danes to win. What would have happened?
If the Scandinavians had taken over England, we'd all be enjoying guilt-free sex. It would be wonderful. No. I don't think it would have been a catastrophe at all. But nevertheless, I do think we have to recognize that the world in which we live has been so much influenced by English culture, English law, the English language, that I think all we can say is things would have been very different. They might not have been better. They might not have been worse. I don't know if they've been better or worse. I don't make that. It's not my judgment to make. All I'm saying is that history would have changed. And if we want to understand who we are and why we are, I think we also have to understand how we got here. And Alfred's story, and the story of the survival of England against the odds in the ninth century, is also the story of America. Because America took on many, many Saxon aspects of its culture, whether it's the town meeting in New England, which is the old Saxon folk movement, whether it's trial by jury. These things all came from the Saxons, and as indeed does our language, although it's much influenced by the Danes, by the French, and by other people. So, no, I don't see it as catastrophic. I'm quite sure the world would have gone on its merry way, whether there was an Alfred or not, an England or not, or whether it had been Daneland. But it would have been a different world. And I don't think it would have been a better or a worse world. It would simply have been different. And I think that's all you can say, is if you care about the society in which you grow up, in which you're a member, then you have to at least understand where it came from and the crisis points through which it went.
There is, this sort of counter-struggle force, the centripetal and the centrifugal, the centralizing inclinations, as you record them, report them, of Alfred. In trying to bring the country together as well as defend his home, and the somewhere between centrifugal and disordering, chaotic effect of these people who were essentially raiders. And it seems that part of the success and part of what you're saying about the difference is that drive on the part of Alfred that we've inherited, to a centralized, organized, law-based...
He's a bore, isn't he? He's a bore. And what we're seeing here is the age-old battle between Puritans and Cavaliers. And the Puritans always win. My theory is it's because they're never hungover.
they haven't had enough fun to be hungover.
And Alfred is pious. He wants order. He's in love with scholarship. He is a lawmaker. And the Danes are outlaws. The Danes come in having no law, no rules. Although, of course, the moment they establish a society of their own, they begin to establish rules, which you do, of course, to protect your women and your property. So laws are going to come very fast. But in the initial invasion, there are no laws. And the Danes, of course, stand for freedom outside the law. And I was interested, brother, you wanted the Danes to win. I mean, in many ways, so does the hero of the book, even though he's English. He wants the Danes to win because he much prefers the company of the Danes to the company of Alfred, who is a pious boor. But in the end, it's the pious boors who, they always win. Pious boors always win.
Is this your reading of history?
Yeah, I mean, you look at, just take three conflicts. I mean, the English Civil War, American Revolution, and the American Civil War. I mean, they're all three between Puritans and Cavaliers. And as somebody said, I will make no comment on the last two, about the English Civil War, is that the Royalists were wrong but romantic, and Parliament was right but revolting. And
revolting in all the senses.
For historical novelists, because the romantics tend to win out. I mean, we tend to write about the romantics because we like them, because they appeal to us. But I do see this as very much the same sort of thing, that the Danes represent a sort of a spirit of freedom, which is also reprehensible because they're going to do an immense amount of damage and slaughter and rape and pillage. They're not people you particularly want to see coming up your coastline of a foggy morning. But we have romanticized them. That's why we have Minnesota Vikings, and we have films about them, and they're seen as a romantic. But they were horrors at the time.
And then you can go home and close the door. We'll be back in a moment with Bernard Cornwell, who has more to say, and we have more to hear in just a moment when we return with the Paula Gordon Show. Please do join us.